Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the special February NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it is their turn to speak. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens to public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending in person will be acknowledged to speak first, then by Teams, and then by phone. You'll be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star then one on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to provide comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the open public meeting notice, please?
Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger, the Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing and comments are invited on any private activity bond projects presented today.
Thank you, Tim. Manira, could you call the roll, please?
Yes. Chair Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Barlow.
Here.
Phil Villaggio.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Maciel Ferrara.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Jewel Antoine Johnson.
Here.
Marcia Marley. Robert Shimko.
Here.
Josh Weinrich.
Here.
Aaron Cruz, representing the executive branch.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo. Manuel Polino for Commissioner Justin Zimmerman.
Present.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean Lazarette.
Here.
Keith White for Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Munira. We have two sets of meeting minutes to approve today. The first are the minutes from the December 19th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. I kindly remind board members to state their name for the record when making a motion or a second. Could I hear a motion to approve the December 19th board minutes, please?
Motion, Robert Shimko.
Thank you. The second?
Fred Dumont, second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the meeting minutes are approved. Secondly, before you are the meeting minutes from the January 23rd NJEDA special board meeting. Could I hear a motion to approve the January 23rd special board meeting minutes, please?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thank you, Fred. Second?
Thank you, Mr. Glover. Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. Let me move to the chairman's remarks. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the special February EDA board meeting. Our February board meeting was originally scheduled for Wednesday, February 12th, but had to be rescheduled due to the snowstorm and delayed opening declared for New Jersey state offices on that day. Due to the scheduling change, I have to join remotely, but I want to thank Danielle and her EDA colleagues for arranging this combination in-person, telephonic, and Microsoft Teams board meeting and EDA first. We're going to see how it goes this morning. Vice Chairman Sarlo is in the room in the event that my participation slows us down, but we're going to give it a try. Secondly, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to our newest board member, Josh Weinrich, recently appointed by Governor Phil Murphy. With a distinguished background in innovation and finance, Josh brings invaluable expertise to the EDA board and our broader mission. I was fortunate to work with Josh when he was the CEO of the New Jersey Pandemic Relief Fund, one of his many philanthropic endeavors. On behalf of the entire board, we're thrilled to have you join us and look forward to your contribution. So welcome, Josh. And then thirdly, I'd just like to call all the board members' attention to the email that Emma sent out last night with our board dashboard, and particularly the summary of EDA's activities in 2024. It's really pretty stunning, as according to this piece of paper, in 2024, the NJEDA made 2,815 awards across 60-plus programs with over $1.8 billion in value. So really a tremendous year and wide-ranging impact from our various programs. I'd encourage everybody to, you know, review that and frankly, share it with your friends and colleagues. Today, the NJEDA board will be considering approval for the second cohort of New Jersey Innovation Fellows, a groundbreaking initiative designed to foster entrepreneurial spirit across the state. As the first program of its kind in the nation, it provides both financial support and strategic guidance to early stage entrepreneurs. What sets this program apart is its innovative approach, offering income replacement grants to diverse entrepreneurial teams. This ensures that promising founders can fully commit to developing their ventures without the financial constraints that often hinder early stage business growth. The New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program is just one example of how the NJEDA is helping to advance Governor Murphy's vision for a stronger and fairer New Jersey by cultivating a more dynamic, inclusive, and resilient economy. In addition to supporting startups, we continue to invest in strategic innovation centers, which serve as catalysts for research, development, and collaboration. These hubs provide shared spaces where entrepreneurs, researchers, and communities can work together to drive long-term economic growth. Last year, we expanded this initiative by announcing four new strategic innovation centers across the state, doubling our existing network. With a total state investment of over $100 million, these centers are strengthening New Jersey's innovation ecosystem. One of the most exciting developments is the Princeton AI Hub, where we recently welcomed CoreWeave and Microsoft as new partners, joining Princeton University and the NJEDA. This collaboration is a testament to New Jersey's continued leadership in cutting-edge AI research and emerging technologies. By fostering partnerships between students, educators, entrepreneurs, and industry leaders, we are shaping the future of technology and reinforcing New Jersey's position as a global innovation hub. The NJEDA remains dedicated to advancing Governor Murphy's vision, supporting entrepreneurs, driving technological breakthroughs, and strengthening New Jersey's economic competitiveness. We're excited about the progress we've made and look forward to the opportunities ahead. With that, let me turn it over to Tim for the CEO's report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's great to be with everyone. I'll try to be brief. I've got a fair bit to cover, but then we have a pretty meaty agenda ahead of us, so I'll make sure we get to it as quickly as possible. But, you know, January, February is for most of us is a busy time around the EDA, and we have a lot going on and a lot for your consideration today. We're also marking, you know, this is the last week of Black History Month. Michelle and I and a few others are going to be doing a Black History event with EDA-supported Black-owned businesses right here in Trenton with Assemblywoman McCoy later today, and commemorating all the contributions that Black New Jerseyans made to our economy. Just one thing to highlight, there was a story in the newspaper a week or two ago that the number of Black-owned businesses in New Jersey nearly doubled from 2018 to 2022. I think that the something like 467 small business grants we've made to Black-owned businesses in that time helped fuel that, but really I think a good marker and reminder of the governor's commitment and why we're so focused on equity and inclusion and diversifying our economy. In terms of things that have been going on since we last got together, Terry mentioned the Strategic Innovation Centers initiative. The governor announced the Princeton-Microsoft-CoreWeave combination. And when you think about groups of people you like to be associated with for the EDA, Princeton, CoreWeave, and Microsoft's a pretty good trio. We also just last week announced another investment with Nokia and Bell Labs and their move to New Brunswick. And then this morning, if you read NJ Biz, you saw a preview of an announcement we'll make later today of the 10th Strategic Innovation Center with Coriel in Camden, which is a life sciences research institution, Coriel in Camden. That does mark, for those of you who notice these things, that marks the sort of the first South Jersey, or at least Southwest Jersey, Strategic Innovation Center. We have the aviation-related one in Atlantic County as well, so two in South Jersey, but one, the first one in Camden. So we're really excited about all that. Again, I think that's a signature accomplishment and investment under Governor Murphy's leadership in innovation and entrepreneurship that is going to pay dividends for decades to come. We also continue to make tremendous progress in launching programs, not just approving them at this board, but since we were last together, we reopened the application for the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program. We launched the FEED program, which stands for Food Equity and Economic Development, Food Security Initiative, last week. And the week before that, the third phase, the Manufacturing Voucher Program, launched. And you know, we'll continue to review those applications and process them appropriately. Thinking to not just about what we do, but how we do it. This didn't make my written report because it happened after I finished the written report, but the Office of State Comptroller last week put out the third and final report on the tax credit program, the legacy tax credit programs, and I won't go through it in great detail. We'll do a full briefing at the next audit committee meeting, but I will just read to you the subheader from the press release that the Comptroller's Office put out, which was, a follow-up review by the Office of the State Comptroller finds the state agency made substantial improvements. So when you get an audit with a positive headline, we'll take it. And obviously, tremendous amount of work over the years to get from where we were when the headlines in the original audit were a little different than that one. And a tremendous amount of effort has gone into making sure we do everything we can to be, first and foremost, stewards of taxpayer resources. That you can never be perfect. This audit report wasn't perfect, and you shouldn't expect perfect audits, but a really, really strong testament to the work that the team has done. I want to give Bruce, I don't know if Bruce went, but Bruce in particular, a shout out for his leadership heroism in getting us to that place. So with that, we've got a ton to get through. I will happy to take any questions. Just one last piece of housekeeping business. Just do want to welcome and give a shout out to Lisa Almeida, who has joined our team as chief counsel as of a couple of weeks ago. I forget. Lisa? Governor's office is probably still recovering from the loss of Lisa, but we'll hopefully they'll get through it. And we're thrilled to have her join the team and heading up all of our legal and compliance efforts as well. So welcome to Lisa. With that, happy to take any questions. If not, I'll yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman, you're on mute.
Sorry. Got to go to the public comment section of the meeting now. I will now like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period, they will be acknowledged to speak first in person, then by Microsoft Teams, and then by phone. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Each person will be acknowledged to speak one at a time in order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment portion of the meeting. A staff member may mute you if you are unable or unwilling to remain muted, and or may remove someone from the meeting if they are disruptive. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star then one to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to speak and provide comment based on the order received. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each person will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired, and a person may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there is enough time available for all those who wish to speak. Related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I will now acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide public comment. First in person, is there anyone in the room, Tim or Danielle, who wishes to speak?
Going once, going twice. You may go to the phone, Chairman.
Okay. Having no in-person comments, we're going to call on commenters on Teams with their hands raised. Danielle, do we have anyone in that category?
Folks on the phone, if you want to, excuse me, on Teams, can you either unmute yourself and announce yourself or raise your hands, preferably, if you want to provide any comment? Not seeing any.
Okay, Danielle. We're then going to go to comments on the phone. Operator, can you please read the intro?
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question by pressing star then two. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press star then one at this time. One moment for our first question. And I, one moment here, don't believe we have any. I am showing no questions.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, operator. We will now close the public comments section of the meeting and proceed with our items of the day. As we do at every meeting, we give brief reports on the committee meetings that took place between board meetings in preparation for the board meeting. I'm going to start with the policy committee report as the chair. The NJEDA policy committee met on January 30th and considered several items which are being presented for action today. Under economic transformation, staff presented the NJ Innovation Fellows Cohort 2 application approvals and declinations. We have two new products, NJ ZIP, the Zero Emissions Incentive Program, will be the third phase of the voucher pilot, and the NJZEV Zero Emission Vehicle Financing Program. Under community development, staff presented a grant agreement pertaining to the North Shore Festival. Under DEI, staff presented a request to enter into contracts with firms for employee stock ownership plan feasibility services. And lastly, under authority matters, staff presented a recommendation to approve the designation of an official newspaper. Staff will present on each of the items on the agenda today. Moving on, our first item under economic security, Lena Rivetti on the NJZIP program.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you for your time and attention. I'm eager to present this memo with you today, requesting approval from the board for a third pilot phase of the New Jersey Zero Emission Incentives program, otherwise known as NJZIP. As you may know, the goal of NJZIP is to support New Jersey businesses and institutions in purchasing zero-emission, medium to heavy-duty vehicles by reducing the upfront capital cost of purchase. This memo proposes the use of REGI funding to expand the current pilot into a third phase, with $75 million allocated for vouchers and up to $500,000 allocated towards continued project costs to track program compliance. The goal of phase three will be to launch two rounds of funding no sooner than a year apart, with $37.5 million available in voucher funding each round, half of which will be set aside for 6 months for the state's designated overburdened communities. This phased approach is to control the flow of applications received while ensuring funding continuity amidst high demand, enabling businesses to better plan fleet conversions over time. In addition, we plan to implement several enhancements to the application process and agreement structures, which are designed to increase flexibility, minimize administrative burden where possible, and strengthen relevant contracts to more effectively enforce program requirements. Can you please click to the next slide? The first two phases of the program have been met positively. To date, NJZIP has received 500 applications across both phases, and staff receives weekly inquiries about a third phase. The program has had strong support from minority and women-owned businesses, small businesses, and environmental justice communities. Despite changes from phase one to phase two, which expanded the pilot from select overburdened communities to the entire state, and also included heavy-duty Class 7 and 8 vehicles, which attracted new businesses to the program. To date, reserved phase one vouchers have been mostly redeemed, which have contributed to over 150 new zero-emission vehicles across 71 closed applications. Currently, recently approved phase two waitlisted applications are being closed, while a few dozen phase two vehicles have already been delivered. Despite NJZIP's popularity and success, we've noted a significant percentage of withdrawn applications that were unable to proceed. On reviewing the reasons for withdrawal, timing and financing emerged as two primary pain points. We aim to address these concerns by enhancing flexibility in this program and implementing a complementary financing program, which will be discussed in the following agenda item. This memo, however, highlights the specific changes to be made in NJZIP Phase 3, with all other program details remaining unchanged from Phase 2. Please click to the next slide. So vehicle eligibility will remain unchanged, and the program will continue to welcome organizations statewide. However, the existing EJ community bonus will be replaced with a set-aside that expires 6 months after application launch. One of the more significant changes involves vendor eligibility, which will be restricted to licensed New Jersey dealers that can be approved on a rolling basis, and it will include a one-time participation agreement with improved structure for enforcement. Additionally, while there has been no change to buyer eligibility, the purchaser application fee will be a flat $500 fee, and clarifying language has been included to prevent related entities from self-purchasing. Vouchers will be streamlined by eliminating extensions in favor of a full 18-month voucher duration term, being that extensions were provided to a majority of our Phase 1 and 2 applicants. Base voucher amounts remain largely unchanged, except for a reduction in the Class 2B voucher amount to align with the NJDEP's incentive for that class. And it should be noted here that a number of Phase 2 small businesses received a 10% environmental justice bonus, which has now been restructured as a set-aside. The manufacturing bonus has been removed due to lack of uptake. However, the scrappage bonus has been reintroduced and increased by 50% to encourage increased scrappage adoption and for staff to gather additional information on its economic and environmental implications. Lastly, and as touched upon previously, half of the vouchers will be set aside for 6 months each round for small businesses domiciled in the state's overburdened communities, which will maintain the REGI funding plan's prioritization of funds in those communities. We're pleased with the momentum we've achieved to date and the opportunities that ZIP Phase 3 would present. We look forward to your consideration for approval, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them now.
In the funding, is there any funds available for infrastructure upgrades for the businesses for charging the vehicles?
So at the moment, NJZIP does not support charging infrastructure.
Do we have any other programs that they could, a small business can look into?
At the moment, we do not. However, there are discussions about charging infrastructure and program to be able to address those because it has been a pain point for some of our applicants as well.
And it's a great question, Robert. The part of the answer to that question is that DEP and BPU, I don't know if Elizabeth wants to comment on that, DEP and BPU have some programs related to charging infrastructure, and they sort of had the ball on that portion of it. And then there's a substantial federal investment that was contemplated around all this that is up in the air. We'll talk more about federal stuff in executive session, but there was challenges there on the federal side. Do found challenges.
Funding available for some additional programs plotted out for 2025. So that is on the drawing board, as you might expect.
And again, remind us, the funding for this comes from the REGI auctions, correct?
For those of you who don't know, that's the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
Yes. Any further questions or comments? By hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Cruz.
Second?
Dragon, second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye, aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? So hearing none, the motion is passed. Next, the New Jersey ZEV financing program, Sean.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. As my colleague Lena mentioned, we're here also presenting a new complementary program to the NJZIP program, NJZEV or ZEV financing, standing for Zero Emission Vehicle Financing. This is a new loan program that will provide financing for new commercial, medium, and heavy-duty zero-emission vehicles. As I mentioned, it's intended to be complementary to the NJZIP program, offering financing for the cost of the vehicle that may not be met by the voucher or other outside grant funding that an applicant may be utilizing. However, it is an independent program in that an applicant does not need to be utilizing an NJZIP voucher in order to access and secure a ZEV financing loan. The motivation for creating this program is to continue to support deployment of zero-emission vehicles, which are critical for meeting the state's clean energy goals, as well as supporting vehicle purchasers that may otherwise struggle to get financing. As Lena mentioned, some previous NGZ voucher recipients, mainly small businesses in the state, were unable to deploy their voucher due to an inability to secure funding for the remainder of vehicle costs beyond their approved voucher amount. The transportation sector continues to be the largest source of emissions in the state of New Jersey, with medium and heavy-duty vehicles contributing significantly to those emissions and related co-pollutants. The program before you today seeks to utilize $25.5 million from EDA's share of funding from the REGI auction proceeds, and according with the initiatives outlined in 2023 to 2025 REGI strategic funding plan that governs REGI funding uses. Of that total, $25 million will be used for loans, $15 million of which will be set aside for applicants based in overburdened communities, which are a priority for REGI funding guidelines. In addition, up to $500,000 is requested to be used for the procurement of telematics devices, which ongoing program costs similar to the NJZIP program, used to track vehicle compliance and in-state mileage. The memo also requests that the board approve delegated authority to the chief executive officer to approve loan applications and utilize an additional $25 million in REGI funding as available should application demand exceed this initial funding allocation. Go to the next slide. Loans themselves will range from a minimum of $50,000 to a maximum of $500,000 and can be used for up to 100% of the vehicle purchase price for one or more eligible vehicles. The ZEV program will use the same pre-qualified list of vehicles and vendors reviewed under the NJZIP program, given the overlap of program focus, and to streamline the application process and eligibility for both vendors and purchaser applicants. Loan terms will be for 5 years, starting from the time of closing, which will occur following vehicle purchase, delivery, and registration in state by the applicant. Interest rates are intended to be favorable to help support zero-emission vehicle adoption, beginning at a base of one-half of the five-year U.S. Treasury rate, plus any applicable EDA risk-based credit premiums determined for standard EDA underwriting processes. Underwriting will be completed based on a borrowing entity's financial history, including standard EDA personal guarantees. In addition, EDA will be a lien holder for all vehicles financed per standard vehicle lending practice in the commercial industry and will be required to be named as additionally insured on any vehicle insurance policies. Loan funds will be dispersed directly to vehicle vendors upon closing, following a similar approach that the NJZIP program uses for voucher disbursement. And financed vehicles will be subject to the same three-year compliance term used also by the NJZIP program, requiring registration and operation in state. We thank you for your consideration of this program, which will not only help strengthen the NJZIP program, but also offer a new financing tool to support vehicle adoption in the state. Thanks for your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Hey, Sean, you might point out, I think this is an interesting feature, the telematics program and why it's important.
Sure, yeah. So we require, as part of the terms, under this program, NJZIP, that vehicles be driven in-state for the majority of time. The telematics devices are essentially GPS trackers that plug into the vehicle. They report back to us on a dashboard. We can kind of see where vehicles are driving in-state, making sure they're meeting that compliance, but also helps us kind of see the environmental impact of the program, how many miles we're actually seeing switch from a combustion vehicle to electric, and also seeing what communities those impacts are in, which will really be good data for us and our partners at DEP going forward.
What happens if you find someone is driving it, you know, only 50% in state?
Yeah, good question. So we have a couple recourse options available. You know, ultimately it could lead to default in the program. You know, for a first time occurrence, you know, we have some other flexibility to kind of give them a warning and an ability to cure that period. But, you know, ultimately it could lead to default, which would trigger standard default practices under other EDA loans.
Got it. Thank you. Any other questions, comments?
Got a quick question. Wouldn't we anticipate the turnaround time to assist these applications? Obviously, go finance a car, it's once instantaneously. How does this relate to, you know, what the commercial sector has?
Yeah, it's a good question. Luckily, try to do it as quickly as possible. So one of the benefits is that we're pre-approving vehicles. So we know the pool of vehicles that are going to come into us. So that's one variable of the equation taken away. We're also requiring, you know, upfront information with the applicants. So we'll try to get as much as we can from them upfront to streamline that process and also do some dual track reviews where we're approving them as an entity to make sure they're good standing at the state. At the same time, we're looking at their finances. So recognizing that, we also understand that it's a significant lead time for these vehicles still. So we're trying to build in flexibility where we can given those changes in the market.
Thank you.
Yep. Good question. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I mean, it strikes me that both of these programs are really interesting, innovative programs that certainly in our ZIP program, the take-up has been, I think, pretty dramatic. Any other comments, questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
I do motion.
Motion.
Okay, I'm going to consider that a second. Hearing no further comment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the program is approved. Thank you, Sean.
Chairman, if I could, before we go to the next item, one observation and one omission from my CEO report. Observation, we were just talking about a bunch of clean energy initiatives, which is great, and electric trucks, electric vehicles, which obviously I think are great. I don't know if anyone heard, there's been some policy and funding changes at the federal level. These programs are not funded by any federal funds. These are funded by REGI proceeds. There are obviously some risks related to federal subsidies, for example, for electric vehicles and other things that could change. I don't know if they will or won't, but they certainly could. And that's part and parcel of a broader review. And we're going to have a discussion in executive session about sort of where we see the world as of whatever time we get to executive session on how the federal picture is evolving. It's a changes every 15 minutes or so, but we'll give you the best snapshot we have. And that's obviously spending a lot of time, not just the EDA, but across the administration, making sure we're keeping abreast of and trying to be proactive around any federal changes. One example of that, and this is more policy than funding, and I neglected to mention this in the CEO report, but we did announce a couple weeks back, you know, obviously continued real significant challenges in the offshore wind industry, a number of sort of negative announcements both in the marketplace and at the federal level. And so one of the things we announced a couple weeks ago, was that we're accelerating the review of strategic alternatives for the Windport, which first phase of which is complete, plus or minus, and it's a gorgeous piece of infrastructure. And presently, however, has limited business opportunities. So we're doing what I think you would expect us to do, what I think the taxpayers would expect us to do, which is take a serious look at what else we can do with it. No promises, no guarantees, no certainty that materializes. And, you know, we are, again, doing the stewardly thing and taking a hard look at, you know, what else could be done with, you know, world-class infrastructure, 200 acres of waterfront property. There are options. We'll see if they present themselves or not. But that is something we're spending some time on, a fair bit of time on, and taking quite seriously because we've made a huge investment there and realizing it, creating some jobs, creating some vitality is what we ought to do here. So happy to take questions on that. Again, I apologize. I left that out of in my written report. I forgot to say it, and it's important, so I forgot to say it. Okay. Right back to you, Chairman. Sorry for the.
Okay, thank you. Next on venture, Michelle Martinez on the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Cohort 2 application approvals and declinations.
Thank you all. Today I'm pleased to share with you the outcomes of the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Cohort 2. Of the teams recommended for approval, with 6 out of 8 teams eligible for diversity bonuses and qualifying for education bonuses, the 3 out of 8 cohort companies today are eligible for opportunity bonuses. Excuse me. These teams span 7 eligible municipalities and target a range of targeted industries. In aggregate, this approval represents an approved amount of $2.8 million in the form of income replacement grants and participation into the New Jersey Innovation Mentorship Program. Get a drum roll. Okay. And so the cohort companies are Recognition AI, leading in the information technology sector. With you can actually go to the next slide.
Drum roll first.
Exactly. Drum roll, sorry. with a total award of $300,000. We have Best Bar None focusing on finance and insurance with a grant award of $350,000. And then we have Business Advisor in the information technology, so another tech innovator, for a grant award of $350,000. And then we have Civilian Laboratories in the life sciences field with a total award of $350,000 as well. We have Smart Ship Network in the advanced transportation and logistics industry with a $300,000 award, and Omnimetry in the life sciences field as well with a $400,000 award. Next, we have Natural Sense focusing on life science. And then lastly, State Ease in the information technology sector as well. These recommended applicants have 30 days to fully form and register their ventures if they have not already done so. A detailed table of the prospective fellows is attached in Appendix A with descriptions. For those not advancing at this time, Appendix B provides insights into the discretionary application. For context, this round received a total of 40 applications with 18 here being recommended for approval, 27 applications were deemed incomplete, and 5 are being recommended for discretionary declination. So with that, I will take any additional comments or questions that I may be able to address.
Just note, Brief congratulations. This is really exciting. This is the second round in a row where you've had good geographic diversity in this program, so in a way you might not have expected. A lot of sort of startup world is sort of clustered around in around New York City and therefore Jersey City, Newark. Good to see Jersey City on the list. That's great, but to have Lakewood and Burlington, a couple in Mercer County, I think also speaks to trying to sort of spread the wealth, literally, of a sort of startup activity. Very cool.
Any comments or questions?
Can you provide some information with regards to how this program is funded?
Sure. So this is program is funded by ERA funds with a $10 million appropriation.
And those are state funds, correct?
Correct.
Sure. Any lessons from the first cohort?
In terms of lessons from the first cohort, I think actively staying engaged. I think these entrepreneurs are looking for resources at every single turn, and with just the macroeconomic things that are happening, I think they're looking for people, they're looking to talk to people, resources, and so this mentorship program really provides that one-on-one connection that people really need to really avoid making costly mistakes in this really wild environment. So certainly a lesson and something that we're taking into cohort two as well.
Great. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve these recommendations?
Cruz.
So moved, Mr. Glover.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the recommendation is approved. Thank you, Michelle. Next, Christina on the North to Shore Festival.
Probably going to be the easiest one we approve today. The item that we're presenting today is really just seeking approval for NJEDA to enter into an agreement with NJPAC for the 2025 North to Shore Festival. This will utilize the fiscal year 25 appropriation through the State Appropriation Act, and it supports the operating costs associated to the festival that will take place this summer. Happy to take any questions.
And again, Christina, just give us a little context. Last year's festival was quite successful.
We received a yearly report. There's also quarterly reporting that NJPAC does as well, too. It takes place in 3 cities. We have Newark, Asbury, and Atlantic City. And again, it's really driven by more of a governor's initiative, and that's why it's state appropriated as well, too, to really support that. So Prudential is one of the biggest sponsors of this, and the state is as well, too, to help it continue growing. So the agreement's exactly the same as it was last year, and this will allow PAC to utilize the support as well, which is for $3 million.
Just a couple of notes. Thanks, Christina. NJPAC is called out in the budget language as the recipient of this. So this is not like a procurement or an RFP or you can go to anybody. Budget language is pretty specific around that. Second, pending a happy outcome here in a moment or two, March 4th is the lineup reveal for the 2025 series of shows. I know more than I can say. It's not my news to make, but there's some exciting acts on the list. They did announce Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are doing a comedy show in Newark, I think, looking at Ty, who's in charge of all things Newark. So it's, it should be fun. Ending a happy outcome here. No pressure.
All right. With that as an intro, any further discussion questions? Hearing none, could I hear a move? Go ahead.
Just a question. Is there still the tech component with Propelify?
No.
That's always been a shoulder event with its own own set of activities that's not necessarily part of North Shore per se. It's co-branded. It sort of flies on a similar flight pattern, but not part of the festival per se.
Okay, thank you.
Could I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
All right, thanks, Phil and Fred. No further discussions. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
This is Aisha Glover. I think I have to recuse because I sit on the board of NJPAC.
Yep. Okay. All right. The noted and the motion is approved. Thanks, Christina. Next, Brianna Hill on Employee Stock Ownership Plan Assistance.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning. Today, the DEI team is presenting a memo to seek approval for two contractors to perform feasibility study or technical assistance services for businesses seeking employee stock ownership transitions. And the use of wealth disparities initiative funds from the Fiscal Year 2024 Appropriations Act. And just to note for everyone, we will be returning to the board in March to seek approval for the assistance program itself and establishment of the program, of course. And related to this memo, in 2021, the governor assigned a task force to examine wealth disparities in New Jersey. One of the recommendations resulting from the task force was included having a state-developed program to encourage employee ownership. And as you may recall, in July, the board approved an MOU with Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations that in part enabled the school to assist NJEDA in the outreach, education, and engagement for the public regarding the employee ownership in the forthcoming program. In September 2024, an RFP was issued seeking proposals from firms experienced in ESOP transitions, employee ownership transitions, or mergers and acquisitions to provide technical assistance and feasibility study services through the forthcoming program. As defined in the RFP, feasibility study services include, but are not limited to, the analysis of businesses' earnings with interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization added back in, management team structure and number of employees, value of a company, existing employee benefits, transaction structure, and any tasks that may be necessary to execute to assist a business in achieving the optimal metrics for an ESOP transition. At minimum, services should produce an in-depth written assessment of the company's outcomes based on the above measures. We received three proposals, two of which were responsive. An evaluation committee was convened, and the members scored the submissions by the personnel, experience, and technical proposal of the proposers. Onyx Partners Group scored a 4.0, and the Lazier Capital Partners were scored at 3.9, both of which met eligibility requirement thresholds. The committee was not provided with the fee schedules, which were scored based on procurement policy. A best and final offer was then issued, to which only Onyx Group elected to reduce their fees by estimated 18.28%. And to reiterate, this memo is seeking just the approval of entering into the contract for these services with Onyx Partners Group and Lazier Capital Partners, as well as the use of Wealth Disparities Initiative funds from the Fiscal Year 2024 Appropriation. I will pause there. Questions?
And I have a question. Yeah. And I don't recall if we discussed this at the committee meeting, sure. But are these two vendors going to help refine the program? You know, a little obviously backwards, you know, having selecting the vendors before it adopts the program.
Yeah. So
the intent?
Short answer, yes. But.
Yes. So we also issued an RFI back in 2024 to kind of understand the landscape of employee ownership, some of the challenges, some of the jurisdictions that have already enacted some of these programs. And one of the challenges was the technical expertise. I have never personally done an ESOP transition. And part of what we are asking these contractors to do is exactly that, refine some of the necessary qualities of eligible businesses, good candidates for these businesses. So next month you will see the program. There's one component that we have to wait for our agreement to go through with the contractors for to kind of, you know, assist us in getting to that spot where we can, in good faith, you know, produce this program. And so once we enter into this contract, some of the restrictions that we have through the procurement process will be lifted, and we'll be able to have those conversations with the contractors.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Tim, are we able to monitor the progress of the contractors as we disperse funds?
So I will, I'm kind of getting a little bit into the program specifics, but the disbursement of the funds is going to be dependent on the contracts that they enter into with clients. We're going to be able to track it, and we're going to only disperse funds once we can prove that those services have been completed.
I see. So Onyx and Lazier will work with a client and then get reimbursed for the fees through this program. Is that right?
Yes.
Got it. Understand. I think we talked about this in committee as well, the sense of demand for the product?
Yeah, so part of our MOU with Rutgers was really instigated by their Institute for Employee Ownership that currently operates within the School of Management and Labor Relations. Right now, they get a lot of interest in from businesses looking to transition to ESOPs and employee ownership structures. But they don't have the technical ability or, you know, they're not a firm. They don't offer these services. Mm-hmm. But we can kind of calculate based off of the interest that they get on a monthly basis. They get about 20 companies that reach out to them. And looking at those estimates, if you look at what percentage of good candidates come out of that, it's about 10. So we are expecting about 10 a month. To be interested in the program. Now, we are going to have to work with the firms on capacity loads and see what they're able to carry, but that's the estimate as it stands.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see, you know, what the quality of the potential candidates is, you know, who meets the criteria, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to monopolize the questions. Any other questions, comments? Hearing none, can we hear a motion to approve? And again, this is proceeding with the vendor procurement part of the program.
Jewel Antwine, motion approved.
Thanks, Jewel. Second?
Carl, second.
Thanks. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, this is approved. It'll be interesting to see your response. Thanks, Brianna. All right, next we're going to move to the incentives portion of the meeting. The Incentives Committee met on January 29th and considered two items which will be presented for action today. First, staff presented and recommends to approve tax credits for a digital media applicant and a film tax credit applicant. Staff will present each of those items today. So the first item is Chris Delvecchio, I think, is going to present both of these. First is a digital media tax credit program.
Thank you, Chairman. Under the digital media tax credit program, Audible Inc. has applied for their fiscal year 2022 digital media expenses, most of which are expenses incurred in the production of Audible's exclusive and original audiobook content that's produced in-house at their Newark-based Audible Studios. As part of eligibility for credits under the program, a production must meet two expense eligibility thresholds. The first is 50% of the applicant's qualified digital media expenses must be for wages and salaries paid to full-time employees in New Jersey, and the second is that the applicant must incur at least $2 million in qualified digital media expenses through vendors authorized to do business in New Jersey. This project does meet both eligibility requirements, with 93% of its total spend incurred for wages and salaries paid to New Jersey workers, and they clear the $2 million threshold with over $33 million in qualified spend. Their award includes a 4% diversity bonus worth $1,339,227 for a total award of $11,383,425. We do have a current tax clearance certificate for the applicant. Sister agency checks are complete and they're clear, including the legal review, which was held up due to issues with Audible's parent company, Amazon, but those issues have cleared now. And we've received a taxation acknowledgement letter for the applicant as well. Any questions, concerns, comments?
Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko.
Thank you, second.
Josh Weinrich, second.
Thanks. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Hi, this is Aisha. Audible is my employer, so I'll be recusing.
Understood. Thank you. Noted. Okay, the motion passes. Next, the next item is the film tax credit program.
Before we do that, Chairman, it's okay. I just want to jump in with one comment. We talked in prior iterations about sort of the look-back nature of the digital media tax credit. First of all, that's a in-statute feature of the program, so anyone who applies and avails himself of it is using the statute appropriately. One way to think about the digital media tax credit a bit differently than nearly all the other tax credit programs we have, it's actually more like the R&D tax credit, which is administered by Treasury and done so quite well, and in that it's an as-of-right, essentially. Ours is a bit more complicated. Program that folks can claim when they're ready to claim it, but it sort of helps create sort of a fertile environment for digital media, just like the R&D tax credit does as well. So you think about sort of the look back nature and, well, why are we doing this? I think it's partially just sort of about creating that framework. The other thing I mentioned is that you might have seen some good news that MLB Networks recommitted to Jersey up in Elmwood Park, the old Martel facility. The digital media tax credit is an important part of, I think, their understanding of why Jersey is a good place to do that. We didn't give them an eMERGE credit. They didn't get a place-based credit, but I think we should look forward to applications from them on the digital media credit side because that program is available. So I would encourage you to think about that.
Working with them, actually, currently. So.
Good.
So for the film tax credit, thank you, by the way, Chairman. The EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of one film project under the film tax credit program submitted by Delta Films, LLC, for their qualified film productions expenses on the film Song Sung Blue. And they're also calling it Denim and Diamonds. It's their code name there. It's a musical film starring Kate Hudson and Hugh Jackman. We've received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review submitted budgets to make sure they're reasonable for industry standards. The total qualified spend for this project is just about $29.5 million. The applicant received a 2% diversity bonus as well of $590,000. And the total credits considered for this recommended approval is $10,266,769. Any questions, comments, or concerns about this one?
Hearing no comments or questions, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Cruz.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the foam credits are approved. I did just a week ago see A Complete Unknown, which I think was one of our projects in New Jersey, which has gotten a lot of critical acclaim. It's kind of fun to see the finished product. Next, we're going to go.
Is it good?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we want to make sure it gets not just the tax credit, but the chairman's door, you know, the Siskel and Ebert, two chairman's thumbs.
Double thumbs up.
Okay, perfect. Thank goodness. Shalom.
I did
lose a sleep over once, know what you thought of it.
Yes. All right, we're next going to go to the Loan Review Committee. Marcia, are you on the phone?
She's not.
Okay. We have, I think, several items on the agenda. The first is Delaware River Partners, LLC. Out of an abundance of caution, I'm going to recuse myself from this since I think the underwriter is Morgan Stanley, who manages some accounts for me. Charles, could I ask you to take the lead on this one? And then maybe go right into the real estate committee report when you're done.
Sure, Chairman. So I believe the first matter listed is a bond. There's going to be one vote on this for the Delaware River Partners and DRP Urban Renewal. We're going to be hearing from a staff member, Angela Kyle, Senior Credit Underwriter.
Morning. This request is for final approval of the issuance of tax-exempt bonds in an amount not to exceed $350 million. The applicant is Delaware River Partners, LLC. They own and operate the Repauno Port and Rail Terminal, which is a deep-water port located on the Delaware River in Gibbstown Township. The co-applicant, DRP Urban Renewal 4, is a wholly owned subsidiary of the applicant, and they will be responsible to construct and operate the site financed by the bonds. Tax clearance, legal review, and sister agency checks are clear for Delaware River Partners. Legal review and sister agency checks are clear for DRP Urban Renewal 4. The receipt of tax clearance for DRP 4 is pending. The bond resolution includes a condition that tax clearance must be received prior to the execution of the bond purchase agreement. This approach is supported by Bond Counsel and OAG, as DRP4 is a newly created entity with no prior history with taxation, and it's a subsidiary of an entity that does have a tax clearance certificate. The issuance of the bonds will assist the applicants to finance the project consisting of the expansion, renovation, construction and equipping of certain dock and dock-related facilities at the Repauno Terminal, with two new loading arms and related facilities, a new above-ground cryogenic tank together with associated product chilling facilities, new pipings to connect the cryogenic tank to the new liquid dock facilities, and to connect the new system with the existing terminal. The bonds will also assist with funding an interest reserve, a debt service reserve, and the cost of issuance. Section 14282 of the Internal Revenue Code requires that facilities financed with bonds be governmentally owned, and this requirement will be satisfied by the EDA through a layered lease structure. Delaware River Partners owns the whole site, which is about 1,600 square acres. The portion of the site related to bond financing is about 18.7 acres, and this portion will be leased to DRP4. DRP4 will then sublease the 18.7 acres to the EDA, who will then immediately sublease it back to DRP4. As a result of the EDA signing this lease, the environmental status of the property came into question, and if the EDA could have any liability in its capacity as the lessee of the sublease. This site, which formerly operated as a chemical manufacturing site, has been subject to investigation, monitoring, and remediation under DEP oversight since the 1980s. As discussed in the confidential financial review, EDA staff is comfortable that there are satisfactory protections in place via the lease structure, prior owner of the site legally remaining the responsible party for remediation, regulatory obligations of the prior owner with the DEP, environmental insurance to be in place for the life of the bonds, and indemnifications provided to the EDA. Thank you.
Thank you. Any board members have any questions or comments? I'd just like to say I'm not part of the loan review committee that looked at this, but Tim and his staff were proactive, and I had a separate call with them on this particular project as it relates to the environmental. I got an abbreviated summary of what the project was about, but we probably had a half hour discussion about the environmental liability protections for the EDA, and I was thoroughly impressed of all the different avenues that they looked at and all the protections put in place. I know Angela kind of did a gloss over on the environmental, but I could tell the board members satisfied that we did everything, staff did everything to protect the EDA from liability protection in this particular deal. So happy to see that. Okay, so if there's no other questions or comments, I'd like to get a motion.
Motion, Cruz.
Second.
Second, Fred Dumont.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Any recusals or abstentions?
I recuse myself, Morgan Stanley, is our manager for our funds.
Motion passes. Thank you, Angela. Okay. We will now go into the real estate section of today's agenda. The EDA Real Estate Committee met on January 31st to review and consider 8 items prepared and discussed with staff. Seeing this today's agenda, staff presented the following recommendations to be approved: the approval of the comprehensive development budget for maternal health and infant health innovation center here in Trenton. The second one, the acceptance of funding from the New Jersey Department of Treasury for the purchase of New Jersey Transit properties. The third item is an MOU between the EDA, EEP, and New Jersey Transit, New Jersey Greenway Project. And lastly, the presentation by staff of 5 award recommendations under the Urban Investment Fund Grant Program. The first up is the Maternal and Infant Health. Juan Burgess to present.
I think that committee meeting broke the record for how much contemplated investment in any one given real estate committee meeting took place. So thank you, Chairman of that. Juan.
Good morning. We're basking the members who approved the comprehensive development budget of $86.737 million to develop the Maternal Infant Health Center and allocate funding in about $17.881 million and allocate or reallocate an additional amount of $46.856 million. And lastly, a creation of a $25 million reserve to backstop the American Rescue Fund Capital Project Fund. Released by the First Lady in 2021, the Nurture New Jersey Strategic Plan charged NJEDA with support from other state agencies to establish a center in the state capital that focuses on innovation and research in maternal and infant health through partnership with state academic funder, businesses, and faith communities. With that charge in mind, the authorities already approved about $23 million for property acquisition, design, construction of the center, and also the construction manager, which is Torcon, and the architecture and engineer, Ballinger, to design and construct the building. At this point in time, we have advanced to schematic design and have established a construction cost estimate, which is including the comprehensive development budget for $86.737 million. The goal is to stay within the budget estimates within the budget, and if required, do value engineering to progress the project forward. In no event will the project cost exceed the amount allocated today. So as I previously stated, there was the members approved $23 million, which is $20 million of American Rescue Plan, state and local fiscal recovery fund funds, and $3 million of Strategic Innovation Center funds, which were approved solely for the acquisition. Today, we're asking that the members allocate funds that are already in the authority's possession but have not been approved by the board, which is ARP Capital Project Fund money of $25 million, and an additional allocation of ARP SLRF funds that we received of $20 million. We are also asking the members to approve an additional $7 million for Strategic Innovation Center money to develop the project. In addition, we're requesting that the members reallocate funds. There's an approximate, we received a fiscal year 21-22 state appropriation for planning on NHE, which was $2.9 million, and we're requesting the members to allocate the balance, $1.856 million, for uses in the budget. In addition, we're asking the members to approve any balance of the previously approved $3 million Innovation Center funds, which were approved for construction, for uses, other uses within the budget. That closing hopefully will happen this Friday. In addition, we're asking the members to reallocate fiscal year 2022-2023 state appropriation of real estate project funding of approximately $35.3 million as follows. $10.381 million for project uses included in the budget and establishment of a reserve of $25 million to backstop the ARP CPF money. Staff requests the members reserve $25 million from real estate project funding to serve as a backstop in case the U.S. Treasury does not provide funds. This acknowledges current uncertainty about federal funding. Additionally, the ARP funds have a spending deadline of December 31st, 2026. Which real estate staff and construction managers currently believe can be met. In addition, the capital project fund required the center become operational on or before December 31st, 2026. And the United States Treasury could decide to recapture the $25 million capital project funds for failing to meet the deadline. Any questions?
Yeah, hey Juan, before we go on from this page, so I understand that $25 million. What about the first $20 million at the top of the page? Are we confident in that?
Yes. We have estimates right now that we would be the non-capital project fund money has to be expended by December 31st, 2026, not place the building and make it operational. So we've already done estimates believing that we can allocate it's actually 20 plus 20, it's $40 million by that deadline.
And Terry, as it relates to sort of broader federal questions, we'll talk about this when we get to executive session. It's pretty tricky, pretty fast. But the big kind of Rubicon we see is, do we have the money in the state's accounts today?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we not? The 40 mm-hmm. under SMRF is part of a big package of $6.something billion that the state received that has been spread across a gazillion or two projects, some at the EDA, some across the state. That money is in the state's control. Is it riskless? No, but it's in the state's control. The 25 that's in this capital projects fund is still sitting in Washington in a U.S. Treasury bank account. We have to ask for it at some point when we can make reimbursements.
About $6 million.
I take that back. $6 million is coming our way. But most of that 25 is still in D.C. We have to ask permission. Hopefully we'll get it. We think it's duly qualified under the rules of that program. But just from a agency perspective, that's from other state appropriations we've gotten over the years in our real estate project funds.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
Project as far as liens and all things like that. So will that all worked out?
Well, yes, the SBA lien, that's all worked out. We're going to acquire the property and pay off that lien, and that money is going to be held in reserve to assist the Board of Education to find an additional site if it's justified by their strategic plan that they filed with SDS.
Thanks. And the board members have any questions or comments?
One other comment I would just make is that the reallocation, the funds that are being reallocated are not being taken from any other program. I understand that they are leftover, if you will, are available funds.
That is correct. The funds not being used by the program.
Which, by the way, is a choice to not do other projects. We have a list of four or five. I'm sure that those are the things to be considering doing with that money. And this is a choice. I think it's the right one. And I stand by it 1,000,000,000% because I think the both the timing considerations and the importance strategically and morally of this center are too high to kind of blink here and pause. Because pausing is not really – pausing would be deleterious to the future of this project. Put it that way.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Okay. Hear a motion?
Brett Dumont needs a motion.
I'm sorry, I just want to – I have to recuse myself. This matter is going to be appearing in front of Trenton City – Trenton's Planning Board. No, I'm sorry, this is Maciel Ferrara.
Thank you. Recusal noted. Okay, Fred, we have a motion. Second?
Second, Cruz.
Aaron?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions other than what's on the record? Hearing none, motion passes. And we have the next matter to be presented by Brian Keenan, acceptance of $65 million from the New Jersey Department of Treasury for the purchase of New Jersey Transit properties. Okay.
Good morning. So this is the beginning of a long-term development project for the EDA. In 2024, the New Jersey legislation allocated $65 million to the EDA for the purchase of underutilized and vacant property for redevelopment to transit-oriented development. The idea is to increase ridership, get funds to the struggling New Jersey Transit, and provide an additional tax base to the local municipalities. So the $65 million is coming from Treasury. It's to be matched with $35 million of EDA funds to create a $100 million fund for the development of these stations. When the properties are sold, so this is, again, a long-term project, but we're looking to get the approval of the board to accept the funds from Treasury. We'll accept the funds here, then we'll proceed with purchasing the properties, clearing them for development. When they're sold, we'll get one-third, we'll get two-thirds of the resale value back,
exactly.
The excess value beyond that. You will be hearing in the coming months the specifics on particular properties we're looking to purchase, but for right now, the board is being asked to accept the $65 million from Treasury so that money can be moved over to the EDA to create the $100 million fund for the acquisition of properties. Staff is currently identifying properties and working closely with New Jersey Transit so that we can have a transaction, ideally before the end of June. Any questions?
Board members have any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, motion to motion.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, stay there. Brent, get back to, sorry.
I'm still here.
Thank you. Get a motion?
Oh,
motion, Cruz.
Second?
Second. Josh.
Welcome.
Okay. We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you.
Brian, thank you.
Yeah, we
thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Okay. Next matter up in the real estate is a memorandum of agreement between the EDA, the DEP, and New Jersey Transit for the New Jersey Greenway project presenting. Is John Benchmark.
Good morning. Thank you, Vice Chairman. Good morning, all. My name is John Bedigno. I'm the Assistant Director of the Infrastructure Division within the Real Estate Development Group here at the Authority. Alongside me today is my Director, Bill Dixon, who will be able to assist in answering any questions members may have today. This is my first time presenting to you in the forum, and I appreciate the opportunity management has given me to present. Also appreciate the opportunity to work on a project like New Jersey Greenway Siting Project, the Authority. So why are we here? We are requesting today the members approve a Memorandum of Understanding between the Authority, New Jersey Transit, and NJDEP to engage a construction manager and construct Phase 1 of the Greenway in the City of Newark, Essex County. And as of today, the language of the MOU has been approved by the AG's office and all signing parties. So what is the Greenway? The Greenway is unique, linear, recreational and transit park that will span roughly 9 miles between the communities of Montclair and Jersey City. The Greenway development is being spearheaded by NJDEP and their State Parks Department. The Greenway also reserves a corridor within its footprint to support future multimodal transportation, known as the Transitway. Development and oversight of the Transitway falls within the purview of New Jersey Transit, hence why they are signing PARC. An initial tri-party MOU was executed in February of 2024, but EDA only held a commercial role in that arrangement. Now the authority will collaborate with NJDEP and Transit on the planning, design, and construction of the Greenway, namely as the delivery partner for the construction of Phase 1 in Newark, which is approximately 8/10 of a mile. For the authority to deliver any additional phases of the Greenway, an amendment to the MOU will be needed to be completed. Acting as a delivery partner is the authority's primary task, and NJDEP is responsible for sourcing all funds for this project. Regarding funds, DEP will provide the authority with a minimum of $51.3 million of state and federal funds for Phase 1 of the Greenway. DEP currently possesses an excess of this amount with approximately $38 million in federal American Rescue Plan Act funds and $35 million in state debt defeasance funds. A tertiary funding source has been identified, but would require a separate funding agreement for the authority to utilize. That has been noted in both the board memo and the MOU. Construction is anticipated to begin on this project in quarter three of 2025. All federal fund expenditures must be completed by December 31st, 2026, similar to the funding source of MIHI. The authority is actively working on procuring a construction manager and will return to the board in quarter two of this year, likely the May board at this point, for approval of the CM award and to establish the project budget. If you could go to the next slide. We included a second slide here to show the rendering of the Greenway and to illustrate where the Newark section is in regards to the full Greenway development centrally located. There's also a link for more information that takes you to the DEP website about the Greenway development program. So with that, we'll open up to any questions.
Thank you, John.
Two quick editorial observations. Sure. Okay. Well, one, the Greenway project is really cool, and something the governor and a lot of folks have been excited about for a long time. Thrilled that EDA is going to get a chance to put a, hopefully get a chance to put a shoulder into this because it's a really cool, important project. If you think about it, the governor described this as the high line of Hudson-Essex County, which is pretty cool. And so this is a really cool project. Two, I just give a shout out to John and to Bill and a bunch of other folks. One of the reasons I think we were asked to get involved in this is because of their work on things like the Windport, which they spent most of their time over the last couple of years building on time, under budget. And so being able to deploy that expertise on other state products of importance to the state is a really good thing for us. So just want to flag that as we're figuring out what to do with the port, we are using our capabilities to advance port missions for the state.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay. Any board members have any questions or comments?
I just had Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, the County of Essex is intimately involved in this, so I'm going to recuse myself. I believe some of the properties are ours as well.
Hopefully you still like it, though, right, Phil?
We love it. We love it. Where I grew up.
I expect you to call in advance.
And I was going to ask, the what's the transit way? Like, it talks about alternative forms of transit. What would that be?
So it's still, part of the planning process with New Jersey Transit, but there has been some concepts of, track-mounted vehicles. The goal is net zero carbon emission for whatever they do choose to implement there.
But this would primarily, in the first phase, be walking and biking, I assume?
Yes, there will be walking and biking elements as well.
There's a 15-foot wide corridor to be not to be developed or to just be like gravel or something or reserved for New Jersey Transit for future transit way as they determine it. Everything else around it for basically a linear park.
Yeah, could be paved, could be gravel, depends on Jersey Transit planning.
New Jersey Transit is an active partner in reviewing the design plans and providing comments.
I think Fred's advocating for a zip line, right?
He's going to touch it up first.
Any other board members have questions or comments? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, I don't think we
need a motion. I'll move it.
A second?
I'll second.
All those in favor now?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we have Phil as a abstention or a recusal. Motion passes.
Sure.
Thank you. 1,000
Okay. We now have the Urban Investment Fund Grant Program Funding Award. There's going to be five separate presentations, five separate votes. Just in advance, and see the City of Passaic is getting an award. I'm going to recuse myself on that particular one, as one of the recipients is a recent client of mine. But starting off, we have the City of Patterson. All five are going to be presented by Team Barber.
Mr. Vice Chairman, and good morning, everybody. I'm going to do one presentation, and I think we're going to vote separately. Danielle's giving me guidance, so I'll defer to
do what Danielle says.
Yes, that's the good thing. So we're presenting five applications for approval under the Urban Investment Grant Program. The order I present them will be the order, I believe, that are on the slides and the order I believe you're voting. So I think I did this okay. The full list of projects that you're going to see are in your board packet. I'm going to highlight one or two of them for each of the municipalities, just as to be conscious of time. So just by background, on March 7th, 2024, the board approved the creation of the program using $38,198,148 of SLFRF funds to provide grants for the revitalization of key commercial corridors and to undertake real estate projects in eligible municipalities. Based on commuter-adjusted population and municipal distress, six municipalities were eligible to apply: the cities of Camden, Newark, New Brunswick, Passaic, Patterson, and Trenton, or their designees, for either $5.7 million if they were under 100,000 people in commuter-adjusted population, or $7 million if they were over 100,000 in commuter-adjusted population. The program requires the applicants to identify a key corridor, develop a strategy focusing on mitigating or addressing the economic harms or losses from the pandemic, and to increase foot traffic and local spending. The program provides funding for three project types: building rehabs, building reuse studies, and public space projects. Applicants must include and complete a minimum of two of those projects. Delegated authority was approved for the EDA to approve modifications to various projects in the grant agreement will allow for different timelines to meet federal funding requirements. If projects are not completed, or if they do not complete two projects, the authority reserves the right to have the applicant be no longer eligible for any remaining funding or to claw back. This is not a scored application. This is not a competitive program. Each application was presented, that's being presented for funding, has been reviewed and deemed satisfactory to meet program requirements, including the different funding factor considerations. And I would also like to just thank our sister agencies who worked with us on this and the Attorney General's office to iron out some things. You're hearing five. The City of Camden's application you'll see at the March board meeting. But we're presenting the other ones today. I'm starting with Patterson. The grant award recommendation for the City of Patterson is for $7 million, which will address negative impacts of the pandemic. Their larger project that they're doing is $17.65 million, so we are funding $7 million of that. To revitalize the Spruce Street corridor, they're undertaking two building rehabs, one reuse study, and two public space projects. The five projects will address negative impacts through targeted investments in heritage tourism, the growth of businesses and public services near the Great Falls, and opening up more public space near the falls. Highlighting one of their projects, it's a youth wellness hub at 59 Spruce Street. It's a former school building that's being rehabbed to include 5,000 square feet of commercial storefront along Spruce Street to create a vibrant streetscape. Daniel, am I pausing, or am I just going to keep presenting?
It's at the chair's discretion.
Keep going. Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
The second one I'm presenting is the City of Trenton. The grant award recommendation is $7 million. Their overall project is $9 million to revitalize key properties on the South Broad Street corridor. They're doing two building rehabs to increase foot traffic and drive economic activity. Trenton is working in partnership with the Mercer County Improvement Authority on these two, one of the projects. They'll play a vital role in the revitalization of the corridor and focus on some adaptive reuse of some historic buildings, placemaking, and fostering economic growth. The project I'm highlighting is the Roebling Machine Shop, aka the Wireworks Building, for those of you in the capital city. They'll use funding for the rehabilitation of windows, roof stabilization, preserving a critical part of Trenton's history while continuing to connect it to the future, appreciation through the arts. If you've been to Art All Night or seen the Trenton Circus Squad, they use this building. It's an economic engine near the transit district, and it's a large space to be utilized for different projects. Next, talking about Invest Newark. Invest Newark is the applicant designated by the City of Newark to apply. We're recommending a $7 million award. Their overall project is $9.4 million to revitalize the South Broad Street corridor. They're undertaking one building rehab and three public space projects, all focused on increasing foot traffic and negative economic impacts.
Somebody on the Teams, if you need to remain muted. Oh, you need to remain muted, please, whoever. Yeah.
The project I'm highlighting for Invest Newark is the Lincoln Park Soundstage project. They're providing the funds for the installation of a weatherproof soundstage to augment the performance capabilities of the park. That park is home to the annual Lincoln Park Music Festival, draws tens of thousands of people to downtown Newark, and among other activities and events at the park. City of Passaic is the next one. The grant award recommendation is for $5,732,716. Proactively addressing the negative economic impacts of COVID through seven projects. They're doing two building rehabs and five public space projects. Their overall project costs $8.34 million, and they're working on the South Main Street corridor, or the Main Avenue corridor, excuse me. And these not only improve the look, feel, and function of the buildings, but also improve public spaces. The City of Passaic, I mentioned, is doing five public space projects. They're revitalizing prominent public spaces at five key gateways to the corridor, including one around City Hall, where they have numerous public events, concerts, and public markets. And last but not least is the City of New Brunswick. The grant award recommendation is for $5,732,716. They are working to bring back visitors and students to George Street. Their larger project is $7.16 million. They are doing one building rehab and two public space projects. And again, this is to drive foot traffic back to George Street after the pandemic. The New Brunswick Gateway project, the one I'm highlighting, is the conversion of an irregular triangular-shaped parcel across from the New Brunswick train station. It's adjacent to the Helix development that the sport has previously contemplated and approved, and this parcel will be converted into kind of a gateway location with an art installation, wayfinding, and seating, and it adds to the welcome nature of the gateway. I'm happy to take any questions about all of them, and then your vote.
Okay. Any board members have any questions about the grant program or any of the five projects?
Just one thing, first of all, Giancarlo, thank you for the very detailed and good presentation. I have a lot to get through in a little bit of time. This is very purposely designed to not be unduly kind of over the top of the state to tell the city what they ought to do with this money. We press categories of, you know, building rehab, public space, investments, those kinds of things, but very much sort of choose your own adventure for these six municipalities so that they can decide, because what New Brunswick needs is different than what Patterson or Trenton or, you know, whatever needs. So it was very much designed to let those municipalities and their leaders, their mayors, and councils come back to us with what they thought made sense. The other thing I just know, Giancarlo mentioned this, Camden, no controversy, nothing odd, just their application wasn't quite ready yet. These are federal funds. We wanted to get planes off the tarmac as fast as we could. So we'll be back with Camden when they're ready, hopefully March, but they're ready.
Hey, Tim, are these among the last sort of allocations of federal funds that were associated with pandemic recovery?
Yeah, I'm just thinking. Broadly, yes. There aren't a ton more new federal. I mean, we'll have an item at the March board around property acquisition. That's you're starting to run toward the bottom because it has a 2026 yeah. clock on it.
Yeah, okay. Hey, Charles, do you want to go through all of them, and I'll do Passaic since you're recusing on that one?
Yes, the chair, I'll go through the first three. I actually also have to recuse on New Brunswick.
Okay, great. You do the first three, and I'll do the last two.
Okay. On New Brunswick, my firm is actually did the design for that George Street, so I have to recuse myself.
That works.
Thank you. All right. So the first one, City of Patterson. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
So Aaron will be second. All of those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? There are none. Motion passes. Second one, City of Trent. Motion to approve.
Motion, Fred Dumont.
Fred, second.
Dragon, second.
Fred, this is Maciel. I have to recuse myself. My office worked on the application.
Thanks, Maciel. We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Okay, motion passes. And third one is City of Newark. Motion to approve.
Dragon, motion.
We've got a second.
Second, Josh.
Thank you, Josh. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Okay, motion passes. I'm going to turn it over
to Aisha Glover. Dropped the call at 11 a.m., so she would have recused on this item, but she's no longer on. She's not part of this vote.
Good enough, Danielle. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to back to the chairman for Passaic and New Brunswick, which I will be recusing on. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Charles. Okay, so the next one is approving the award to the City of Passaic. Can I hear a motion to approve?
Second.
Fred Dumont, second.
Okay, noting Charles' recusal, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any further recusals or abstentions? So hearing none, it is approved. And lastly, the Urban Investment Fund grant to the City of New Brunswick. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thank you, Fred. Second?
Second, Cruz.
Thank you, Aaron. Noting Charles's recusal, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed, other recusals or abstentions? Go hearing none, the award is approved. Great, thank you, Charles, for leading us through that. Just to finish up on authority matters, Danielle Esser on the designation of official newspaper.
Pursuant to the Open Public Meetings Act, the members are requested to designate the Record as the official newspaper of the NJEDA. The Star Ledger recently announced that it has since ceased print operations as of February 5th, 2025. Pursuant to the Open Public Meetings Act, a public body must designate one newspaper of wide printed circulation as its official newspaper to inform the public of future meetings. Staff therefore recommends that the Record be designated as the official newspaper as it will cover the largest populated areas of the state as of the time of the discontinuation of printing of the Star Ledger. Digital notice will continue to be provided to the Star Ledger given its wide digital circulation, and printed notice will be provided to the Record of the Trentonian. Happy to take any questions. And all public bodies all over the state are doing this right now as a result of the Star Ledger's decision to cease prints.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none, going to hear a motion to approve.
Move it, Josh.
Second.
Second, Elijah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
No one opposed, recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Tim, over to you on board memoranda.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I'll be brief. You have eight delegated authority memos. It should not be surprising given the amount of delegations you've increased over the years. The delegated memos are in some ways sort of the annotated version of the board dashboard that tells the story of what happens between these meetings and when we're not here, which is saying a lot. I won't go through them in great detail other than to highlight a couple quick things. One, we started making approvals of the Emerging Developers Program. That's a kind of a real estate slab. It's a community development-led program, but with focus on supporting real estate developers where they're kind of getting their start and growing into the growing and scaling their businesses. So 29 applications, nearly $6 million approved there. Small Business Improvement Grant continues to be a machine, 162 different approvals there. We're into the several thousands for that lifetime. So that's an important important feature. One of the things that I was going to mention during the dashboard portion of the comment earlier, if you look at just the number of businesses we are directly touching, when I say touching, I mean investing in some form or fashion, we're up 16x compared to when Governor Murphy took office. And a lot of that is things like the Small Business Improvement Grant Program, the Child Care Program, the Manufacturing Voucher Program that are high volume applications, but 16 times more businesses being, and organizations, not all businesses, being touched with EDA funding. So grateful for your all support in that, and great for the governor, great for the governor and legislature's funding of all that, and for the team for executing it, because every single one of those is a story and a file and a diligence process, and it requires a ton of work. So I'm deeply proud of the team that puts that all together for you. Happy to take any questions on any of that.
Okay, no questions. All right, we're going to move now to executive session. I would like to request a motion to enter executive session to receive attorney-client advice and discuss the impacts of and potential litigation related to the use of federal funds and changes to federal policy, the minutes of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. Could I hear a motion to enter executive session?
Thank you, Bob.
Move it, Josh.
Thank you, Fred. I'll consider that a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we're going to now go to executive session. So, Danielle, I'll let you deal with the technology here.
So for any staff or public in the room, if you're not a member of executive committee, we're going to ask that you exit now. We're going to take care of it. Thank you. And Verizon, please, I'm going to move over your speaker line.
Thank you.
Chairs are back in the main.
All right, great. I would like to, we've returned from executive session. Could I hear a motion to adjourn the meeting today?
Motion, Fred Dumont.
Thank you, Fred. Second?
Josh Weiner. Second, Josh Weiner.
Thank you, Josh. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, thank you everybody much for your time. This concludes our meeting today. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using Verizon Conferencing. You may now disconnect.